Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Alrighty then, welcome to another episode of Footnotes. I'm getting really good at rolling into that. Welcome to another episode of Footnotes.
Yeah, you are.
That's got a nice ring to it. But anyway, we're glad you're here with us. Today, it is just myself and Rob.
It is good to be here, but
the few and the proud.
Missing having some of our extra peeps around.
I know. Josh is like working a real kid job.
Yeah, he is.
Means that he's not available during the middle of the day, like a adult. So good job, Josh. I'm disappointed in you for being adulting. I'm not disappointed. I'm just lonely. It's fine. We'll hang out later. Molly's on vacation.
Yep,
I think they're down at Legoland right now with the kiddos.
Oh, that'd be a good trip.
Just Legolanding it up. Saw some pictures from the beach. Waves that were as tall as Thea. So
which
up
is
to
not
your
very
ankles.
Tall.
But hey, they're big for her. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's just us. It's fine. Just the two of us.
Just the odd couple.
I hope you don't get that, Ramez. you need better music taste if you get that one. Anyway.
Yeah. I filtered that song out.
You filtered.
I filtered. I was going like, nope. Not going to do it.
I have no filter. We're recording this in the afternoon. Logan's filter is gone. You've been warned.
Oh, man.
Hang on tight, kids. All right.
We're just lucky you're not napping at this point.
That was about like an hour ago because you got the after lunch, like the food hits my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't normally do too much breakfast. So lunch tends to hit me like a freight train. So about like 2 o'clock, like, oh man, there's a reason the siesta is a thing. Yes. I would fit in very well in Southern, like South American cultures.
Mm.
Like, yes, let's shut down the entire country for about an hour.
Add some heat to the day.
Oh, I'm donezo.
A little bit of breeze.
I'm donezo, which that actually could relate to this week's sermon. You enter a trance. Mm. You're feeling hungry while they're making up a little meal.
Yeah.
Mm.
Four corners of a sheet.
Something like that. Just down. Underneath a hammock or a little covering there.
Yeah.
And maybe it fell on his face.
Probably.
If this doesn't make any sense, come to church on Sunday. All right. we want to start off. This is I've just named it this, but we want to start off with a new segment to Footnotes, a new toenail clipping, if you will.
Yeah.
No, that's bad. We're not going to call it that.
No.
But we're going to call this the discipleship moment of the week.
Yes.
Or the discipleship thought of the week. It'll probably change because we're going to refine the name, but the name can change, but the thought remains the same.
Yeah.
In that we want to give you a discipleship thought or take a moment for discipleship.
We're going to take a moment. We're going to do that.
So run with that, Rob.
Well, what I want to start off with is we see in the scriptures Jesus extend an invitation to his disciples. And not going to go into the cultural context of that today, but I wanted to hear your invitation. What would that invitation look like to you, or what did those invitations? So I'm sure it's probably more than one. And then I was going to share what that experience for me was like.
So the first time that I was invited into a discipleship kind of relationship, I guess, or symbiosis. Ooh, that's a fun word.
Hmm.
Would have been, I mean, obviously my parents.
Right.
Like there's the obvious, like my parents discipled me as a kid.
Yes.
With varying degrees of success.
Yep. Knowing your parents, that's true.
Yeah. Not that they didn't do well. It's just, I didn't learn well. I was a bad disciple in many, many cases.
You weren't always ready.
I wasn't always ready necessarily.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean that I think that's the nature of that relationship.
Sure.
So parents, kids, that's definitely a thing. And then when I got into, I think I had just come out of junior high. Pretty sure I was coming in to my freshman year of high school. or the summer before.
Gotcha.
And they changed churches on us, mainly because there wasn't a good youth program at the church we were going to. There was a couple other reasons too, but that was kind of the, I think that was one of the deciding factors.
Right. Right.
You'd have to interview my dad and my mom, but from what I've picked up, that's kind of one of the main things was they were looking at us kiddos and we were kind of not really connecting with the church. And so we were checking out a different church, and I remember it was Palm Sunday, and the youth pastor, Terry Mode, man, what a guy. Him and my dad pretty much cornered me.
Nice.
I'm sure they actually plotted this, looking back on it somewhat, or maybe they were just both very off the cuff, good at cornering people. But they got me cornered, and dad was like, yeah, Terry's the youth pastor. They do youth group here on Sunday nights. And I'm like, I don't want to go to this. Terry was telling me, he started telling me about the series they were going to start, and it was all about The Matrix.
Wow.
The movie.
Yeah.
Now, The Matrix is one of my favorite movies. Always has been. That was the Hook. First R-rated movie that I ever saw.
Hook, line, and sinker, huh?
And I was like, so he mentioned that, and I was like, say what? You're doing a study on an R-rated movie at church?
Hmm.
I was like, it's like the fish eyeing the bait. Like, what? I'm sticking out my tongue. That looks tasty, but I don't trust this one bit. Like,
yeah, yeah.
What are you doing? Are you before PureFlix, but are you PureFlixing this? Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with the movie here?
Is there gonna be a bait and switch?
Yeah. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
My dad, helpful. Thanks, Dad. He was all like, "Oh, you love The Matrix." I'm like, way to just, there's my cards. I got nothing now. Okay.
Play my
thanks.
Cards for me, Dad.
Thanks, Dad. That's helpful. Yeah.
It sounds like a WWE, you know, the one wrestler's out of the ring.
It was totally a tag team.
Yeah.
It was a tag team, but the ref wasn't looking and both of them teamed up on me. I'm like, where, mom, ref. But
that's awesome.
And somehow by the end of that conversation, I was going to youth group, and not only was I going to youth group, Terry was picking me up on his way because he also lived in Hagerman and drove past our house to get up to Wendell. And so he was picking me up like 30 minutes early before youth group. So it was just going to be more time with me and Terry.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, like, nope, that was a defining moment right there. Hmm. But just getting invited into that. And so Terry was the first person who really kind of discipled me in that.
Yeah.
And he was pretty intentional, but he just brought me along. And so he'd be prepping stuff before youth group. He was usually on top of it. So it wasn't like he was coming up with everything, but it was just 30 minutes early,
right,
opening up the building or whatever.
Right.
You know, just spending time talking, getting to know each other. He would, you know, just talk and listen and tell me. And then also just like tell me about, you know, what was going on in his life and what he was thinking about and planning through stuff and all of that. And looking back on it, that was very effective.
Right.
Because it built up the relational trust between me and him. So that he could then keep,
which started at a minus balance. It sounds like,
yeah. No, I didn't trust the church. I thought it was a bunch of hypocritical bullcrap.
Yeah.
At that point, like I was very done, and I was like a whippersnapper of 13, 14. So
yeah,
like,
yeah,
yeah. So I was checked out. I had everything figured out, and it was just a bunch of hypocritical crap. I was still a Christian. I just thought the church was a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it was definitely at a negative, and he built that up and built that up and built that up. Hmm. Until, I mean, well, now I'm a pastor.
No. Yeah. Now you're a
pastor.
What
you did, Terry. Look what you've done.
Oh,
anyway,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was probably the first one for me, but it was just the investing in time. Like he just did life with me.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, I'm going fishing, or, hey, I'm going to the snack bar. You want to come along? Hey, I'm going to do this. I got to go run this errand. Hey, I'm hanging out at the church here doing this. You want to come hang out?
So a lot of everyday life stuff.
And nothing crazy. Yeah. And it wasn't like, oh, let's sit down and do a Bible study.
Right.
I remember like he tried to do that twice with a couple of us that were kind of leaders in the group, and it was always terrible. It was like anytime we tried to structure some Bible study, like it was just not nearly as good as just it's going and doing down. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So take that for what you will. But
sure. Sure.
So yeah. What about you?
That's cool. Well, you know, I accepted Christ at age 6, but the rest of my parents, my brother, my paternal family, not followers of Christ. So my growing up, I felt very much alone. And then in my 20s, I started going to a Bible study with my cousin, and that was the first time that I really started having any kind of investment by someone that was mature. I mean, there were other moments. There were other Bible study moments, and there were some, you know, throughout those times, there were some significant conversations here and there, but they were far and few between. And then the guy that ended up being my mentor for about a dozen years, he was associate pastor, and he would pastor. He pastored 3 retirement homes, and he ran the recovery ministry. And he was going to the home that one of my grandmothers was staying at. And so when I would go to visit her on Sundays, she would say, "Hey, do you want to go with me to church service?" I'm like, "Sure." And there's the guy from my church, you know, the associate pastor. He's in his 60s at that point, Don Silver, amazing guy. And eventually he's like, "Hey, do you want to help me?" And then it was the same kind of experience of, "Hey, do you want to go with me? Do you want to go with me to this? Do you want to go with me to this other thing? And do you want to help out with Friday night? And do you want to go do a step study at the recovery center with me?" And I just got invited along. And in this particular case, I was a little bit older. I was actually starting to go to Bible school. So it was very much ministry focused, but it was a lot of it was, do you want to go with me? And but the first time that I actually heard someone say discipleship was Jim Putman. I think I'd heard it, you know, like I read it, but I never thought about myself as being discipled or me being a discipler of others. And I remember hearing him preach a sermon and talking about we need to be disciples that made disciples. And I remember driving in the parking lot and my prayer was, "Lord, I don't know what this looks like, but I want to be a part of it." And within a few weeks, I had sat down with the youth pastor and said, "Hey, I'm interested in discipleship." And the youth pastor, we had about 300 students total. And he had different environment types. He had share environments, connect environments, ministered environments, and disciple environments. And he had a czar over each environment. Sometimes as a single person, sometimes as a couple. But we all worked together as a leadership team to work in all those environments. But we had a czar. And so I was the discipleship director. And I was over the discipleship environment. We had 80 kids, and we had about 8 interns and then some volunteers, and we would do discipleship. We'd have a small group time. Well, we'd have a large group time where we'd break into these small group conversations, and these small groups stayed consistent week after week. But then those leaders would engage with those students in other environments and would engage with them outside of the planned environments. And so there was just a lot of let's go with me kind of environments for these leaders and these students. And man, I still have a lot of connection with those interns, still have a lot of connection with even some of those students. And it changed the way I look at ministry. you know, a dozen years later, after, you know, having been in Bible school and been involved in ministry, and just, I just have a great desire and hunger to equip leaders to be leaders of people in discipleship.
Sure.
And, you know, the youth pastor was like, hey, go with me. It was another go with me kind of a environment. It wasn't like, hey, go do.
Sure.
But go with me. And so that's what we get to invite people into too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's between yours and mine, you know, there's that common thread of,
yeah,
Don Silver, I think you said.
Don Silver.
Was the, you know, like, let's go do a, do you want to go do a step study? Like, he was going to go do that anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a, hey, do you want to, you know, it's, I'm going to go do this. Do you want to come along with me?
Right.
You know, and that's, I think that's when I've tried to disciple people, it goes much better when it's something I'm already doing as opposed to, oh yeah, no, I'm going to disciple you. Well, let's start doing this. I'll start taking you through this Bible study, blah, 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 here that I wouldn't have been doing had I not been, quote unquote, discipling you.
Right.
You know, there's a difference. And there's nothing wrong with an intentional, you know, like, I'm going to teach you, go through a Bible study, something like that. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, especially if that's what you were going to do anyway.
Like, sure.
I want to study the book of John, and do you want to go with me?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, a lot of relevance there.
Well, and just in a teaching, you know, in a teacher-student relationship, you know, because sometimes that's the case. Like, and maybe discipleship does take that route sometimes. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But I think that, especially initially, the initial phases of discipleship definitely include that, I'm going to go do this. Want to come with me?
Right. Right.
Like, come watch me do this.
Yeah, being part of my life. It's a relational discipleship. That's what we're about. And heavy on relationship. Heavy on relationship.
It's got to be. Got to be. I like
want to say it one more time. It's heavy on relationship.
Mm. Hashtag Thorbod on the relationship. Go and find the meaning of this.
Go and find
the meaning. Or come with me and we'll find the meaning of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll go see it again.
Let's go. Let's go find the meaning of this together. So that's our discipleship moment.
I like it. That was a good moment.
Week one.
It was a decent moment. So there you go. Now, on to the tasty deliciousness known as footnotes, fodder.
Yeah.
We want to talk about the time frame of the story of Saul to Paul.
Right.
What's going on here? Now, I'm a little bit behind the eight ball on this one because I haven't heard JT's sermon live. I've been listening to the recording and putting that together for the footnotes. Or not for the footnotes, but for the actual recording. But, so on Sunday, JT was talking about Saul to Paul and that whole section of scriptures.
Yeah, so in Acts chapter 9, Saul comes face to face with Jesus on the road to Damascus, and we're told that he's blinded, and that Ananias comes in and lays hands on him, so that he might regain his sight. And starting in verse 20, immediately Saul. His name hasn't changed yet, proclaimed Jesus in the synagogue, saying, "He is the Son of God." And all who heard him were amazed and said, "Is not this the man who made havoc in Jerusalem and those who called upon his name? And has he not come here for the purpose to bring them bound before the chief priests?" Saul increased in all the more in strength and confounded the Jews who lived in Damascus by proving that Jesus was the Christ. And then verse 23 says, when many days had passed, the Jews plotted to kill him, but their plot became known to Saul. They were watching the gates day and night in order to kill him, but the disciples took him by night and led him down through an opening in the wall, lowering him in a basket. And when he had come to Jerusalem, he tempted to join the disciples, and they were all afraid of him, for they did not believe that he was a disciple. So the question is, well, how much time is involved here? And we get an insight into that in Galatians chapter 1. In Galatians chapter 1 and Galatians chapter 2, you get some timeline presented by Paul himself, talking about his experience. And so Galatians 1, it says, "For I'd have you know, brothers, that the gospel that was preached by me is not man's gospel, for I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it, but I received it through revelation of Jesus Christ. For you've heard of my former life in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God violently and tried to destroy it." So we're talking about Galatians chapter 7, 8, 9. Mm-hmm. "But when he had set me apart before I was born, and who called me by his grace, was pleased to reveal his son to me in order that I might preach him among the Gentiles, I did not immediately consult with anyone, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me, but I went away into Arabia and returned again to Damascus." So there seems to be a time where Paul starts preaching, but he goes away to Damascus, and then he's coming back. And then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to visit Cephas and remained with him for 15 days. I saw none of the other apostles except for James, the Lord's brother. And then I went in the regions of Syria and Cilicia, and I was still unknown a person to the churches of Judea that are in Christ. They only were hearing it. He who used to persecute us now is preaching the faith he once tried to destroy. And so there's a three-year period here, and the church in Jerusalem is still not totally trusting that Saul, who became mm-hmm. who becomes Paul, that he wasn't going to try to destroy them, that he wasn't lying about his conversion.
Sure. Just, you know, trying to find the head of the snake or trying to get in good with them.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Sure.
Infiltrate.
Yeah. So I've got this is kind of a fun one. In here, I've got an ESV study Bible that's got major events in the life of the Apostle Paul. Now, we'll go through these with a caveat of there is debate about some of these.
Sure. Sure. So
take this with a grain of salt. Let's see here. It looks like he was born about AD 5 to 10, somewhere in there. Tribe of Benjamin and a Roman citizen. That's important to remember for later.
Mm-hmm.
He's present at Stephen's stoning. This one has him at about 31 to 34. So he's about 31 to 34 at the stoning of Stephen. Okay. I'd heard one that had him much younger. But I haven't actually landed on that. I grew up hearing that he was much younger. Yeah. But the timeline doesn't seem to make sense there then.
It doesn't. And when you had mentioned that a few weeks ago on one of our Footnotes podcast, and I went and read it.
Yeah, and I started digging into that more also. I'm like, it just doesn't seem right.
It doesn't to me either. But
there are some hoops you got to jump through, and it could have been, but yeah, so grain of salt with that one. But so this one has about, you know, early 30s there. Traditionally, they put his commissioning at age 33. Like, he has this road to Damascus moment at 33. Because that's the age that Jesus died at. Church tradition kind of puts it there.
Sure.
33, 34. Sure, we can go for that.
Yeah. I don't see a connection needing to be there.
No, I think that's one of those that they just kind of put it there.
I don't think he would like to be called the new Jesus either.
No.
You know.
He's commissioned on the way to Damascus, not becomes Jesus on the way to Damascus. But so this next one, this is the interesting one here that we're kind of talking about. Stays in Damascus a short time, leaves for Arabia. The reference there is 2 Corinthians 11:32 and Galatians 1:17. Returns to Damascus. That's Galatians 1:17 also, like you mentioned. Acts 9:20 and 22 also. Jews and the governor under King Aretas tried to arrest and kill him. Paul escapes through the city walls. That's 9:23 through 24. And 2 Corinthians 1:32, 33. Now that's about age 33, 34, depending on where you put Damascus at.
Right.
To 36, 37.
Yeah.
So at least 3 years there.
Right.
He meets with Peter. This is about 36 or 37. And then he goes to Syria, Cilicia, I don't know, something like that. And that's 37 to 45. Gets his thorn in the flesh at 42. Herod Agrippa dies when he's 44. And then he spends a year ministering with Barnabas in Antioch. Now that's Acts chapter 11 is where he's at there. And this is age 44 to 47.
Yeah.
So going from chapter 9
right,
to the end of chapter 11 or the beginning of chapter 11, where we're going to end up this week, that's 10 whole years.
Yes.
So like this, I think that it's so easy to gloss over this and just like, oh yeah, this boom, 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 boom. Cause it's written action comic style almost.
Right. Right. It's written to engage the hearer.
They're not writing this like a George R. R. Martin novel, you know, or insert favorite.
And the timeline
writer.
Is not the focus of Luke. The story, the mm-hmm. larger story is, and yet when we step into the story and really consider, well, what does it look like for us to, you know, forgive? And you were talking about. Someone who shared a story where there was a 20-year process where they were able to be trusted by a person that had been hurt by someone else.
Yeah, just to build trust. So it wasn't even them that broke the trust, but it was a 20-year process to build up trust with this person just because they had been hurt by somebody else.
Yeah.
So you imagine
that's real life.
You put that into perspective with Saul, and the fact that even 10 years, like they have 10 years of this guy being repentant and stuff, and to have him, like, he was murdering people. He was ravaging the church. Ravaging is a strong word. I don't know what sort of connotations that bring up in your mind, but that does not bring up PG connotations in my mind.
Which for Cephas, well, first off, for Ananias to go to him as the Lord commands through a vision, like that is a lot
of faith right there.
That is faith. And then for Cephas or Peter to engage with, mm-hmm. I mean, like, you are the leader of the church and you risk, because see the man who was the number one killer.
Yeah, like this guy was the big bad guy.
Yeah.
Pulling you apart. Yeah, that's
and this is what the gospel does.
Yeah, this is that's the Lord at work right there. Because
yeah,
that doesn't happen in our relationships without God's help.
And it takes courage on the person who has been offended to say, "I will learn to trust you. I will."
Mm-hmm.
But it also takes wisdom for the community to go, these are the kinds of things that we need to see. Because trust is earned. Forgiveness mm-hmm. is paid for through Christ on the cross. At least for my life, sure. For me personally, like I can forgive you, but trusting you is a different matter, and trust needs to be earned, and no one can do that for you. In the recovery world, no one can work your recovery for you.
Sure.
And so, you know, that's just, you know, we want to make sure that we have some context to some of these conversations. You know, because I've heard people say, well, we should forgive like the first church forgave Paul because, you know, the Apostle Paul. And I'm like, yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the time frame. Let's talk mm-hmm. about what Paul had to do. Let's talk about the fact that someone was courageous enough to sit down and disciple Paul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was... Well, oh, yeah. No, and the crazy humbleness that Barnabas showed while he was discipling Paul.
Man.
Like, because Paul was a... Like, he was a student of Gamaliel. Gamaliel? I think I'm saying that right. Gamaliel. Which yeah. was like... Primo. That's like... the analogy I've heard is that it's like studying and getting your PhD at Harvard to be a student of Gamaliel, right?
Right.
And then, Marty, I'm completely ripping this off from you. This is like getting your PhD from Harvard and then going and sitting in some TA's class at, the University of Montana, right?
At the community college.
The local community college or University of Montana, and it's taught by some snot-nosed kid with a BA, and you're sitting there. And so Paul has the humbleness to do that. Yeah. And then later in this story, we see when the name does change.
Right.
It goes from being Barnabas and Saul, Barnabas and Saul, Barnabas and Saul, which right. means that Barnabas has the rabbinical... Like, he's got the clout.
He's the lead guy.
And then it flips to Paul and Barnabas. Paul and Barnabas.
And we will tell you what some of those implications are next week.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that more, but the time frame there, like, that's it, when you see these things happening, that takes time and it takes effort on both parties' part.
Right.
You know, this is a lot of grace being shown. And a lot of effort being put out.
Yep.
You know, and Paul did have a very, or Saul, did have a very drastic come to Jesus moment.
Yes, he did.
Which I think we're going to talk about a little bit right here with a concept that Vita brought up.
Oh, this is one of my favorite moments this last week, honestly. Let me get my computer turned back on. I got an email Sunday. It was about 1 o'clock. And I look at the email and it says this: "Hi Rob, hope your Sunday is good." Now it's already a good email, but you know, thank you, Vita.
That's all you need for a good email to Rob is just, "Hey Rob, hope your Sunday is good.
Hope your Sunday is good."
If he gets 20 of those, I'll buy pizza for everybody.
Oh geez. I like pizza, so let's get on the ball there. Did you notice in the passage of today that the area Saul sent the persecuted people through his actions? So did you notice in the passage of today that the area Saul sent the persecuted people and the area's people evangelized, Saul needed to travel through to get to Damascus? Wondering if that had an effect on the lineup of the stories and what it, and if there is any meaning that has. And oh man, I was so excited when I read that. Like, that is delicious.
That's some tasty footnotes.
Oh, that is delicious that our people are wrestling with God's word that way. So for some context, Damascus is...
And looking at, like, not just, like, that's looking at a map.
Right.
That's, like, that's digging deep.
Well, we know from listening to Marty and listening to Aaron Couch that geography matters to the hearer of, you know, the first century hearers of the word. Geography matters. And where Jesus said whatever, you have to know what he said and where he said it. And when Luke is writing about the church moving out, what's happening is Saul would have to travel through that area to get to Damascus, because Damascus is north and east of the Sea of Galilee, and north by quite a ways. I'd have to look up the exact kilometers, but it's
the
roughly...
The distance from the Sea of Galilee, looking at this map, to Damascus is about the same as from Jerusalem to Galilee.
Okay, so twice as far.
Yeah.
Twice as far as the Sea of Galilee.
Galilee is like smack dab in the middle of those two.
And you can't go east and then north because there's a great big, it's not great big river, but it's the Jordan River. And so you go north and then you...
Well, and you got a bunch of mountains on the other side of the Jordan River, don't you?
And yeah.
Big old desert. Like just nobody goes that way.
Right.
There's no routes.
Right. So my response was, that is interesting. I hadn't noticed that. But I bet it does impact the story. And then I invited him to do a little more thinking on this. I'm like, what are your thoughts? And I just kind of sat back and waited.
You sly old man.
Because he's the one that, you know, like if God's spirit is moving.
Sure.
You know, and to ask you start asking questions on the scriptures, like, well, let's let that ferment a little bit. Let's see what God does with that. Mm-hmm. So, a couple hours later, I've been thinking about it and have a couple of thoughts. With people coming to faith and miracles, God is going ahead and lead the church like it did with Israel in the Old Testament.
Mm. Always good when you tie it back to the Old Testament. A little OT.
Oh, he's talking Exodus there, baby. And then with Saul traveling through the area and hearing what is going on in the area with people coming to faith and miracles, God is preparing Saul's heart. Yeah, because that's what he does.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. So Saul is wandering blindly. Well, he's got other people with him, so he's probably not like tripping and falling, but they're all freaking out because like this dude just went blind.
Yeah.
And they didn't see the light. So all around confusing situation, leader had a breakdown and now can't see what's going on. Saul's probably ranting about, I got to get to Damascus. I got to get to Damascus. Right. And so they're traveling up the road and all the towns that they're coming to, they're probably not traveling fast because they're leading a blind man.
Mm.
And, they're coming to these towns that the gospel is spread into and people are going to be talking about
what's been happening,
the things the Spirit's doing, because every time the Spirit's showing up, people are talking in tongues, people are getting healed, crazy stuff's going on.
Yeah.
And so they're traveling through these towns that they've driven Christians to.
Yeah.
Because they drove them out of Jerusalem and they're fleeing from them.
That he drove Christians
through. Yeah. Yeah. I'm assuming the compadres that he's with there.
Oh.
Which that's a whole interesting thought. Like, what happened to those guys
with
that were traveling with Saul?
Oh,
Like all the pictures say he was alone, right? Like when we see the pictures, but
I think he was with people.
People. But whenever we do like a drawing of like the conversion of Saul in Damascus, like it's him and Jesus. It's not the crowd around him.
No. People saw something. They didn't hear the words. That's what I believe it says there.
Let's see, where's that? It's in 3. Now as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven shone around him, all, and falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" He said, "Who are you, Lord?" And he said, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do." The men who were traveling with him stood speechless, hearing the voice, but seeing no one.
Mm-hmm.
Saul rose from the ground, and although his eyes were opened, he saw nothing. So they led him by hand and brought him into Damascus. And for 3 days he was without sight and neither ate nor drank.
Yeah, so they heard the voice.
They didn't see anything.
Yeah, I got that backwards. They heard the voice and couldn't see what Saul saw.
You're like, what happened to those guys?
And they led to Damascus anyway.
Yeah.
Oh.
I want a Paul Harvey on that. Like, and now you know the rest of the story. Like, I want to know what happened to those dudes who watched Paul. Well, heard Saul lose his eyesight there on Damascus. That'd be curious, but.
And Exodus is a process. I mean, I think if we, what I've heard people talk about in their relationship with God is that there were aha moments, but there was a journey that God took them on, and there's a journey where he had to reveal himself to them in practical ways. Didn't matter if their parents knew the Lord before them or not, you know, you can't learn those things about God vicariously. You have to learn them personally and intimately. And so when there's this Exodus process for a group of people or for someone as an individual, you know, there's just no shortcut to that process. And I think that's what Vita's picturing here is that, one, God leads his people on an exodus, and that changes the people around them because he's doing miracle after miracle. But then it lays the path for the one who starts the persecution in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
What a cool picture.
Yeah.
Vita, that was yummy, my friend.
It was good stuff. Good stuff.
Man, thanks for wrestling with God's word like that. That was cool.
Muy bueno.
Yeah.
So if you've got stuff that you've come up with and you're like, this could be interesting.
Yeah.
Or I don't get this, or I think this is what this is saying, hit us up at one of our emails, which is either Logan or Rob or info@missionridge.church.
Yeah.
Because we do enjoy hearing from you.
And talk about these things in your care group, because that's a great place to wrestle with questions that you have. And, man, I've been thinking about this, and what do you guys think? And, man, that's good stuff.
Because more minds are better than ours.
Oh, yes. Most minds.
Most minds? Oh, jeez. All right. Cool.
Have a good week.
Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. Bye.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up #blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.